advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world-famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
You say funny things.
Hello, welcome to the Sofa King Podcast. We are here recording another show. What's this? We're almost to 100.
We're getting there.
90. Getting to 100. Yeah.
96 or 97.
Yeah. Catching up to Joe Rogan right now. Almost. Right. Yeah. We're almost there.
No. Yeah.
No? He's at 1,000. I thought he was at 100.
I think he's in 900s. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous. As on our previous show, we're still here at the home of the miraculous, the world, more world famouser than us, Rob Van Dam.
Yes.
And so we want to thank him. And he wanted to talk about the Italian mob. But me and Brent had an argument over text and I told him we should shave it for the show. we could do that.
You should shave it for the show.
You had an argument.
I had an argument about what's the difference, because he's like, are you finding anything on the mob? Because I got the mafia. All I can find is mafia. And I was like, it's the same thing.
It's not the same thing, though.
It is the same thing.
Mafia is specifically people of Sicilian descent, native Sicilians. They have to
be
from Sicily.
Italy.
No, it's an island.
Off Italy.
Right.
Right. So is it the same thing? Like, I'm confused.
The mob doesn't have the connotation of you don't have to be from Sicily.
I don't believe that.
That doesn't have to be the origin. To be a made man, have to be of Italian descent. You need length?
I want to turn it down a little bit.
Is it? Which one is it?
It's four.
Three.
Three?
Isn't it?
Four.
Yeah.
Four.
Right. Which one? Dude, I'm looking at three.
It's because this is confusing. You are.
If you say so.
No, he's right. He's right. Right.
Is that good? Better?
Better.
Too loud?
I can't tell yet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little better.
But yeah, so mob is pretty much inclusive of any nationality or heritage. But to be mafia, it has to be of Sicilian native birth.
I disagree.
I can't speak to that one. But in today's world and culture, the words are interchangeable.
Okay.
Because people do use either term to describe
right.
the same thing that they're talking about.
Right.
Through all the readings that I've done, there's been like some inconsistencies, you know, like some say like that the mafia just refers like to the New York syndicate. Whereas like the mob refers more to like New Orleans, you know, under Carlos Marcello. Chicago is the outfit, which we all know, and they all have like different terms like within themselves. The combination was Detroit in Ohio. Oh, I'm sorry, was it Ohio?
I never heard that. The combination, fuck? Yeah. Hear that.
So
it's not Ohio. What the fuck is
Utah?
The Ohio mob,
Wisconsin.
No, it's what's east of Detroit? That is Ohio, isn't it? Or east of Michigan? Where
it's going to be Illinois.
I'm going to come back to that. I think, yeah, no, the Cleveland would be Ohio, right?
Cleveland, yeah, Ohio, yeah. So what I want to know, and we forgot this in the last episode, but does the mob like hot sauce?
Well, that's a good question.
I'm sure they eat some hot sauce.
So,
if they do, what sauce would they eat? Yeah, probably. It does sound funny when he says the mob instead of the mafia.
Yeah. It sounds funny when I say a lot of things.
Yeah. But anyway, by the way, it's not necessarily that I want, you know, you asked me like some subjects. This is just one that I geek out in, you know, like it's something,
right.
It's a personal hobby, I guess, of mine. It's a go-to that's lasted several years now, where when I buy a book, it's almost always going to be
about the mafia.
Yeah,
I think I'm that way with World War II. I like obsess about World War II and know strange facts and like it.
Not the Civil War, huh?
No.
No? You don't care about Civil War?
No. I'm conflicted enough.
Oh, okay.
Genetically, I don't need to worry about the,
oh, the,
I don't
need to the worry Nazi about grandparents the and the slaves.
The Nazis yeah. and the Black Panthers yeah. and within one generation, that's confusing enough in my genetic heritage.
We were talking about Alcatraz earlier. That was actually yeah. made for the Civil War originally.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't know that.
To defend off and then to defend against, you know, the California against the Confederates? Wait, Confederates and Union? Is that the terms we use?
Yes.
The North
yeah.
and the South?
Yeah, North and South, yeah.
But anyway, they would put, and then they started using it as a prison for Confederate soldiers and good old Abe Lincoln, and that's how it started.
Did you call him Little Abe Lincoln?
Good old.
Oh, good old. Well, yeah. We found out he's not so good.
Yeah, we did a show a couple of weeks ago on yeah. Abe Lincoln, and we
he's
talked
an
about,
asshole.
About him. But
he's so we do want to thank El Yucateco, our sponsor, and give them a shout out at the beginning of the show, and hopefully we'll be able to spark some mob minds here and have them. Oh, actually, don't really contact us, but try Yucateco. Right.
Are you a hot sauce fan, Rob?
No.
No,
I actually don't. I'm a pretty bland eater. Like when I asked for that sauce on Chipotle earlier, like
I noted that.
That's like I never ever get that. And I just thought, wow, this is real boring. I'm not getting cheese on it or yeah. sour cream or anything. And I thought, little I like sauce. The green sauce. Like I just started. Sometimes there's like a green sauce that's kind of hot, like a Mexican restaurants right. or something. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of new. New to me, the whole thing.
Then when you
there's two yeah. gifts, there's two green sauces in your okay. gift box: oh, a cool. jalapeno and a habanero.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And if you're not,
I'll get into
too big on spicy, try the chipotle because it's really sweet and it's not super spicy, but it's delicious.
And I'm assuming one of those bottles is fire, at least.
Yes, yeah. that's the triple X.
The triple X, yeah, triple X is dangerous.
And it is its name, but it is very good if you just. Put a couple of drops on something. You don't need a whole lot. And the flavor is actually really, really good. Yeah, so
cool.
It's worth a try. Yeah, worth definitely. A shot. So
we looked into the mob and the thing that I did, cause I'm always curious where things would start. And I, obviously it starts in Sicily. Sicily, like if, you know, people always say that Italy looks like a boot. And if Italy is a boot, then the face that it's kicking is Sicily because it's like right in front of the boot. But
is Sicily's shaped like an ass.
Sicily was
Florida is a penis. Of course. Right.
Yes. yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. In like more than just geographically.
I can't figure out Michigan though.
Yeah. I wish it looked like something anatomical. I don't know. So the thing I didn't know, cause apparently Sicily was just like always getting bogarted by people. Like everybody was constantly conquering Sicily. So Sicily was always at war and it was always fucked up and no one ever really kind of came to its aid or anything. And apparently that's kind of the roots of the mob is because there were little groups called mafiosos that had no criminal connection, but it was groups that were suspicious of central authority and laws because whoever was there was a conqueror and they would defend against, you know, invaders. They would right wrongs. They tended to like seek justice and like dole out justice and all this stuff. But then when Italy finally sort of took over Sicily and it became part of Italy and sort of Rome, they already were defending people. They were already the ones that everyone would go to and they kept doing it. And then they just got into some criminal enterprises as well. So I thought that was really interesting. They were kind of like little army vigilante bands defending cities, like a family person. City basically
they were looked up to. They were called men of honor.
Yeah And that was, and I think that idea of like, as ironic as it is, like the mob, even though they're like murdering each other, it's like honorable, like it's all about.
So they were like
code.
Little militias that ran around fighting each other off,
mm-hmm.
so that they would keep the ordinance of their city going.
Well, they stopped. There were, since it was always since Sicily was always like getting upset, since Sicily was always being attacked, there was no central law anywhere. So these different groups went around to stop criminal act. There were no police, there were no soldiers. So these groups were the groups that kept law and order in the cities because
you knew
if you stole from somebody, like there's no cop that's going to arrest you. So someone would go to the family who protected the city and say, this fucking dude took my mule. I don't know what they have.
Took my calzone.
Yeah. They took my calzone
yeah.
and they would come back and
about
they would like get justice for the fact that you stole the mule and the calzone.
And this turned into crime.
I wonder if calzone's even real. That's probably like Pizza Hut invented it or something. We found out later.
That I don't know because I did a, search on Italian food and calzones came up and the different pastas, you know.
As so, a genuine Italian food.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I didn't search genuine. Damn
not like a fake.
Yeah. If they have it at Olive Garden, it's not real. Yeah. It doesn't count. Even if it was traditional, it no longer counts. It gets marked off the Italian list.
Right, maybe. Right. Well, I know pizza's not Italian, so that doesn't work out.
Where does pizza come from?
China.
Chopsticks? That makes sense.
America.
Okay.
No.
What?
I just confused everybody. Bluff. What just happened?
That's bluff.
So, yeah. It sounded like I knew.
Yeah, you did. It sounded legit. So that was, I mean, the mob in Sicily sort of formally became a thing in the 1860s, but it was still, from what I read, really it wasn't organized crime as we think of it. It was just little crime families that were all independent of each other that were sort of dipping their toe in. And of course, in America, it just blew up in the 1920s during Prohibition, because that was sort of what it was. And I was looking into it and I was really, really fucking shocked, because in New York between 1880 and 1890, because I knew there was a big wave of immigration. In those 10 years in New York, the Italian population went from 20,000 to 200,000 in 10 years. And then by 1910, another 20 years later, it had doubled again up to 500,000. So, I mean, that's a fucking massive influx of Italians going into New York. So, obviously, the mafia
just got worse and worse. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So at what point did they, you know, obviously they had to leave Italy. You know what I mean? Did they send the head dudes over to New York to start running shit, or is it, you know, was it a small move? Like they sent their brother over?
No, from what I had read, like in the 1920s, most of the crime families that rose in America rose just because of Prohibition, and they were American, they were Italian American families that rose. But then when Mussolini started to do his shit in the 30s and 40s, a lot of Sicilians came to America to get away from Mussolini, because he was clamping down on the mafia in Italy. And that was when there started to be a bigger influx of Sicilians bringing their organization to America. And I knew Lucky Luciano was a big figure in the mob, but I didn't know he was like the fucking figure in the mob. Like, I didn't know
the organization was owed to him as well.
He started it.
Battles between all the families. There was these small families that, you know, obviously it was an opportunistic thing when they showed up and there was a market, and it was a tolerated market. So like, you can't have alcohol. It's against the law, but it's in demand. Like we talked about in Prohibition, and the police and a lot of the legality is kind of looked the other way. Like it's a because even cops wanted alcohol. People still wanted alcohol. And so like, although it's breaking the law, it's sort of a tolerated thing. And so there's an opportunity in the market. They're already organized, and then they start to compete. And then it's just like bloodbath murdering. Like, you know, murder rate actually rose when they were introduced. And then Luciano comes up with the idea. I can't remember what he called it, but they had all the heads meet. And then they said, look, we're killing each other. Like, how about we show up to a table and vote? And he works out some type of
system. It was a little bit more brutal than that, because there was the Manzano, who I think was from Sicily, was currently the boss of all of New York.
He called himself boss of all bosses.
He called himself the boss of all bosses.
And died within 6 months.
Yeah. He became the boss of all bosses. And he fought a thing called the I'm going to butcher it. The Castel Marezzi.
You're talking about Maranzano. It was what happened was in 1931. That's when the new regime took over, and Lucky Luciano, they came up with the five families, and they made the commission and said we're all going to have like an equal vote.
But he had Maranzano killed, so he could sort of put that in place, correct?
And prior to that, in order to make Maranzano boss, they killed off Joe the Boss Masseria at Coney Island. Because those two were at war, everybody was shooting each other up. Luciano actually talked to some of Maranzano's soldiers, like Joe Bonanno and some of his guys, and said, hey, look, we're going to do this thing, you know? And so it was like, that's how it works in the mob. You get fucked over by the people that you trust.
Right, right.
Yeah. betrayal never happens from someone you don't know.
Yeah. No.
That's true. That's,
we learned that in the Godfather movies, and it's apparently fucking accurate. And the other thing is, and I know I talked about this show when we did our episode on Prohibition, but I kept talking about Boardwalk Empire because it's so accurate to its history of what... Did you ever watch Boardwalk Empire?
Every minute.
Yeah. And, you know, we only recently finished the final season watching it. We were a little bit behind, and this is all, like, all of it. Like, as I was studying for this show, I was like, oh, shit, just like Boardwalk... Oh, shit, that happened. Oh,
the other... I don't even need to study.
Apparently, I already did by watching Boardwalk Empire.
They take a lot of liberties.
They do. But it's, you know, you can still... You'll learn who the mobsters are, yeah, and most of it tends to be fairly... I know they did a lot with Nucky Thomas that wasn't accurate because they wanted to fictionalize him, but...
Is it hard for you guys when you watch a show like that to separate, like, the fantasy from the fact? Like, it starts to merge together, and you're like, did I watch that?
For me, I try to stick towards nonfiction. Like, that's really my passion.
Right.
I think real life is so fascinating. And of course, there's exceptions. But when it comes to mafia, like, I hate it. Like, for me, my favorite mafia movies are Casino and Goodfellas, both like classics. Scorsese is going to be doing another one, by the way, pretty soon.
And who's all?
Hold on. Okay. When people automatically want to start mentioning The Godfather is one of their favorites, and for me, it's like that will skew your information, and which most people don't care, so that's fine. But for me, I do, because then they know these fictional characters that are loosely based on. You know, Mo Green is really Bugsy Siegel, whatever. You know,
all of a sudden you got Joe Pesci in your face. Like, you put that memory with the story, and it makes, for me, I have a hard time remembering which is which.
Well, no, hold on. Joe Pesci is in the other ones, Casino and Goodfellas, which are which have been said to be 95% accurate.
Really?
They changed the names. Good. You know, like in Casino, they call him Nicky Santoro instead of Tony Spilotro, for instance.
Right.
And there's shit like that. But there's two
it's scary.
Two guys that flipped. You know, Henry Hill. Yeah. Everyone knows who Henry Hill is. So the Henry Hill of Casino, his name is Frank Collada. He did the same thing. He flipped, and they both have said that. And so all the books, you know, have all from the both sides, like the cops and the lawyers have written books too, and it all goes right with Casino.
Wow. Because you'd say 95%. That's probably what about the History Channel has. You know what I mean? Because it's about the same.
Yeah. No, that's
so I love those.
I didn't know. I knew Goodfellas was like really accurate, but I didn't know that about Casino. Yeah.
Which one's the pin in the neck? That scene, that's like horrifying.
That's in Casino.
Yeah. That is gnarly. I hope that's the 5% that wasn't accurate. That's terrifying.
That probably happened more than just the one scene. Like, it was probably multiple.
You guys will find this interesting. There's Frank Collada, who's the guy that flipped and exposed all the info from the Chicago mob running Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. He is actually... That character is portrayed in Casino, but it's a lesser character. He's the silver-haired dude, not Billy Zane, Frank Zane, maybe. You know, he's Billy Batts in the other one.
Okay,
you know who I mean.
Yeah,
the hell's his
name? I can't remember his name.
I know all my teachers from kindergarten.
All right. So anyway, in Casino, he's the one that goes up to Chicago and is reporting to the boss, like, "Hey, the little guy, is he stooping the Jew's wife?" No.
Right.
Are you sure? No. That guy. But anyway, that real character. Do you have his name?
Is it Frank Vincent?
Frank Vincent, thank you. Yeah, so he plays Frank Collada in the movie, but they don't put a lot of attention on that guy. But the whole movie was based on his counseling with Martin Scorsese. And the real guy, Frank Collada, is in the movie.
I like when they do that.
At the end, when they start whacking guys... He actually, there's a scene you remember where the old guy comes out in his bathrobe out of the glass holding his stomach. He comes back, "Where are you going? Where are you going, Jackoff?" Boom, he shoots him in the head.
That's him?
That's him reenacting a murder that he actually did.
Oh, damn.
And now he gives a tour.
I'm going to have to go back and watch the movies again now.
Dude, he gives a tour in Vegas now and takes you around and shows you like where, you know, people were whacked and where crimes were committed. You think when he was killing people in the 70s, he thought he'd be like,
one day I'm gonna have a tour.
Yeah.
Like showing people where I killed this homeboy over here in the corner. Like, that's crazy.
Did you go do that? You lived in Vegas. Yeah.
Right.
So how
And I don't look up to these guys, by the way. Right. I mean, they're cold-blooded, horrible sociopaths. That's part of what's so fascinating.
Right.
For me, if I ran over a squirrel up on the street, I would probably pull over and cry. Right. I really don't have that in me. And they kill their fucking best friend, their brother, whatever, yeah, for business. Yeah. And I just, yeah, it's so fascinating that it took over the part of my brain that used to like comic books.
So the guy, yeah, is the guy in Vegas able to do this? Because he already served time, or because
everyone that wanted him is already dead or in jail.
Crazy.
I think Joey Lombardo might still be alive.
Well, it just seems like he'd get fucking arrested.
Yeah, legally.
No, because he flipped. He got.
Oh, okay.
He got,
so all of it was expunged, yeah, yeah, or something.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Yep. That's crazy. I didn't know. I'm gonna have to look that guy up.
It's like, crazy how you can just trade. Like, I killed a bunch of people, but I told on the other ones. Right. So yeah, we'll just call it. Yeah.
And
we're square.
It's, yeah, one of the. I mean, the whole flipping thing is one of the reasons that the mob went as, I mean, was as powerful as it was for as long as it was. Because when Luciano formalized it, basically what he did was created as an organized crime. Like, it wasn't just a bunch of individual families who didn't really have anything to do with each other. He kind of brought them together more with this commission, right?
Kinda. At least he started the structure that would still, you know, go on for many decades. But before him, there really were. Like, he belonged to the family. He belonged to Joe the Boss Masseria and his guys.
Right.
And Maranzano had his guys. And it was like that. It was just like they had different ideas. Like, they wanted to capitalize more on things that the old crew didn't want to capitalize on, venture into, you know.
Right. Different crimes.
Drugs is a part of it. Yeah. They say it's illegal, or it's against their laws to deal in drugs. And if you get busted doing drugs, they'll whack you because the time you'll serve for doing drugs is so much more time than you would do for murder that it'll entice someone to flip and give information out. So they'd rather whack you if you get busted. So they say, No drugs are allowed, but at the same time, they take the money and they do it. And certain old timers are more against it, you know what I mean?
Right,
more old school.
Right.
And they whacked most of those old timers for that reason. Yeah.
And I know the
Luciano Commission thing, I think it just kind of ushered in an area of some peace. I mean, I'm sure people are still killing each other, but it probably was like, everybody calm down.
Yeah, the late 1920s, this. It was just a fucking bloodbath. It was just people shooting each other in the streets. And yeah. No, that was.
What he did though was, like, in New York, he had the five families, yeah, right? They're still there, by the way.
Yeah,
it's They're Gambino, Lucchese, Genovese, Bonanno, and Colombo.
Yeah,
Bonanno's real, dude.
It's Lucchese, but good job though. Yeah, and those weren't the original five. There was some passings on to other ones, you know.
And then because it was originally the five families in New York, and then there was one in Buffalo and one in Chicago.
There's 26 families across the country, so they're all over. Yeah, the Magadinos ran Buffalo, Chicago, depending on what year you're talking about. It was Big Jim Colosimo, and then they whacked him, and then it was John Torrio, and then Al Capone took over from John Torrio, and that still runs today. And that's what's fascinating is, for me, it's cool to learn to talk about the history of it, but I also am interested in how big of a part of our culture they are and were recently.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories around JFK. No, they were totally involved in that. From Jimmy Hoffa to Richard Nixon, like everybody, that's like major people. I mean, they were involved in world assassinations and picking world leaders. And
they allegedly crazy. Funded the JFK campaign for him to win. Like, it was a close race. Like, he only won by 100,000 votes. And then his little brother went after the mob hard, and they said, like, maybe he broke a deal, because it seemed like they got him into office.
Well, what's your take on JFK's dad being a rum runner and a mobster?
I mean, well, he wasn't like a mobster, but he was a bootlegger, he was
Italian, so
but he was, you know, he did work with those guys, and there was a couple times when a contract was put out to kill him. And one time he had Sam Giancana in Chicago smooth things out with Frank Costello in New York, because they were going to whack him because of the bootlegging, stepping on people's toes. And there was another time, I think it was maybe the Purple Gang in Detroit, that were going to whack him. And he was saved by the mob again. So he was like a friend to the mob. Right. And then when Jack was running for office, he needed the Illinois vote. And I think it was maybe like 30,000 or something, but it was
close.
But it was, And they went thug style and waited outside the voting booths and made sure everyone voted, you know, voted or would break. Yeah, totally.
You know, they got baseball bats and just slapping their hand with them.
They would break legs. That's how they did shit back then. Yeah,
that's
awesome. They didn't give a fuck.
Yeah,
and I also I don't know how long it went, but one of the articles that I was reading said that the FBI didn't even formally think that any of these families had anything to do with each other until as late as the 1960s. Like a lot of
1957.
Federal, okay.
So 1957, there's a big meeting in Northern New York in Appalachia, or however you pronounce it, Appalachia.
Mm-hmm. That's the barbecue or whatever, the big barbecue thing.
Yeah. So everyone from all over the country was there.
All the mobsters.
Yeah. Like, supposedly, I mean, there was a lot going on, but Albert Anastasia had just got whacked and he was the boss of the Luciano family, which would become the Gambino family now.
Yep.
And at that time when they whacked Albert Anastasia in the barber chair at the Park Central Hotel, and they tried to kill Frank Costello, which would be the Genovese family after Frank Costello. Like they this dude in the lobby of his when he's going to go home says, "Hey, Frank," and shot him and he turned, and so since he turned, the bullet grazed around his head and put a big carve in his head.
Oh, wow.
They left him for dead, and then when he went to court, he wouldn't testify against the guy that shot at him.
Oh yeah, you gotta go kill him.
And so, but he said, "You know what? I got the message," and he stepped down and he let Vito Genovese take over the family. And the guy that was sent to shoot him ended up becoming one of the most famous bosses of the Genovese family. Once he went from being a driver all the way up to the top, and that guy was Vinny the Chin Gigante. A lot of people know him because he was called the Crazy Don, because to avoid indictments, he would act like he was crazy. He'd wear a bathrobe. Talk to himself.
Bum.
They riffed on that in The Sopranos, because I know Tony Soprano's uncle at first was acting crazy and senile as a way to like avoid getting, you know, that was. And I do want to point out for listeners that like three people at this table are like scrambling through notes and computers to bring facts, and Rob doesn't have anything in front of him, not a computer or
brain.
A fucking phone or
a
piece
of
paper.
Spitting out my highlighted lines. And I was like flipping pages, trying to be like, "Whoa!"
Well, what it is he has a funny eye. He's reading your notes.
Yeah.
it's like going down at your paper.
It's an area of passion in Las Vegas. No, they have
tell.
In Las Vegas, they've turned the old post office into the mob museum. It's like four stories. Anyone with any interest in this area, you should go there. It's the best in the country that I know of, and it's an incredible display. Every time I go there, I walk through for like 2 hours, and I still haven't seen everything. From actual, you know, this is so and so's guns to screens that are interactive.
Yeah.
It's a really cool place. I was trying to work with them to have like a trivia night where we could do mobster trivia to raise attention and awareness for them, and get like local businesses to give bullshit prizes, you know, fucking free food or whatever and shit like that. And I had a couple meetings, but then all of a sudden they got so busy, like around last February for some reason, and then I didn't hear from them, and I didn't go after them anymore because they didn't need me anymore. I mean, I would love to do that, and they have special nights.
You just wanted to help them out because that's your thing. Yeah,
and it would be fun to talk to other, you know, mafia geeks too.
Yeah,
but that was my main thing, was I wanted, because they used to be empty. Every time I'd go there, there'd be like maybe three other groups of people, and all of a sudden, like nothing. I don't know what. I'm not sure what triggered it, but bam! All of a sudden, now every time I go in the last year, there's a big line waiting.
Oh, wow.
So yeah.
Yeah, I know they did some marketing, because when I went there, we stayed, and there was like, you know, come see the museum and this and that, and people were, it was really, you know, you saw it, you know, so you had a choice to go look at it.
They had like a walkthrough interactive thing at Tropicana while they were waiting for the Mob Museum to open. That was actually run by different people, but since that's closed down, they've taken that mob experience, and some of the items have been bought, or you know, brought to the Mob Museum. Now, and that's
because I saw one of the cars they had that was shot up and stuff. They had some really cool stuff in there
in New York City. Go visit my friend at American Gangster Museum in St. Mark's. It's not nearly as big, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
I think the museum in Vegas blew up because it got the Van Damme bump. I think everybody knew you were there, and they were like, "Oh shit, this must better be."
I would hang out there sometimes when I had nothing to do. I'd hang out in the gift shop like I worked there. When people would come, people would come through their tour. I'd stand there and I'd say, "Did you like it? Did you enjoy it? Yeah, what did you like?" And I would just talk to them, and it was just that's fun for me. Yeah.
That's cool.
Do people ever mistake you for Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, I mean, because you guys have there's the movie posters online where they put you on like Double Impact, and it's like you and Jean-Claude back to back and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jean-Claude
did you roll with
anything.
It? You just signed that autograph or you signed Robin Walker?
Just say, Jean-Claude.
I'd fuck with it.
I haven't signed it, but if they, you know, a lot of times people come up to me and be like, dude, can I get a picture? I'm like, sure. We do a photo and they're like, man, I'm such a big fan of yours. Man, thank you so much.
Bloodsport was awesome.
Yeah. Shit like that. But then, in matter of fact, when I was in Jamaica, that's what I thought was happening. And it was so weird. It was like a Twilight Zone episode. Like, first off, I was talking to this chick that worked at this bar. She was like one of the door girls. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking to her for 15 minutes. She never said anything. No. This dude comes up just like that. Oh, dude. Hey, man. Hey, what's up, man? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Dude, I love all your movies. He goes, Mr. Movie Star. That's what he kept saying. Right. Mr. Movie Star. And I was like, okay. He thinks I'm Jean-Claude Van Damme. And then all of a sudden he goes, I love your movies, man. He goes, my favorite was that scene when that guy, he's doing the cocaine on his brother's desk. And I was like, oh, fuck. He is talking about one of my movies. And then the girl that I've been talking to for 15 minutes and didn't know who the fuck I was goes, right. No, the best scene is when he tried to rape his wife. And I was like, whoa, what the fuck?
That's funny.
I was there in November, and the whole time I was there, I was spotted probably 75% is Mr. Movie Star, and like 25% is Mr. Wrestler.
That is funny.
It was from one movie. Wrong Side of Town, for some reason, was like big as fuck.
It just premiered there. Yeah, it just premiered like that. Well, week when you went,
I guess I asked him that. I'm like, what? You know what? Why? And everyone was just like, I love that movie, man.
That's funny.
I say you just work on your French accent and just do the splits, sign that shit, and tell them thank you in a French accent. Walk away.
Just kick them in the neck.
But if somebody, the point was, if somebody does say that, you know, if they're like, oh my God, hey, I love you, you know, they go, oh, I loved Kickboxer or whatever. I just, you know. Hey, dude, you know, right on, dude. I mean, I don't say anything. Right. I don't lie to people, but I don't commit to anything, you know, that way they can leave with whatever they
want. They can be happy with what they have. Sure. And somebody's like, no, that's Rob Van Damme. Right. Like, who did you think you saw?
Right. Yeah.
They still met people famous.
Yeah, that's right. That's
people mix shit up in their head, too. Sometimes they'll even go like this and say, oh, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and do my thumbs. Like, they know who I am. They got me. You know, I've had a guy one time go, oh, I love your 5-time frog splash.
Time.
Yeah, that's Booker T's.
That's Booker T's.
It was like he was all twisted up.
That's funny.
And there's probably people who think that it's all the same person.
Probably, yeah.
Like, sure. There's probably people
I saw that on Twitter. Someone did recently you? Said that they always thought that,
Jean-Claude Van Damme was you playing wrestler. Yeah, that's
you hear
funny.
Everything.
He probably gets it all the time,
everything.
Too.
Dude, you only put, I hear everything so often that it's just like, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, in the same day, I can talk to 10 people that'll say, like, Rob, hey, you look like you're packing on some size, man. You're bumping up, all right. And then 10 other people will be like, Rob, hey, you look like you're slimming down, man. You're getting cut up. Nothing bothers me. I don't put any weight in anything. It's
right.
Just like, thanks, man. But I do take it to heart when someone, you know, is real personal. Like, dude, man, I just want you to know, man, you've really inspired me. You know, I used to love I do take that to heart. I don't want to sound like I don't give a fuck about that.
Right. How do you think Jean-Claude Van Damme feels when he's over in France and somebody comes up and they're like, hey, Rob Van Damme. And he's who's this? Yeah. Who's this? Rob Van Damme. Like, who's this?
Oh, he knows.
I see him at Gold's Gym in Venice.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. He likes to stick to himself, you know, so I don't bother him. But one time I shook his hand, I tried to drop the name of someone that we both worked for, you know, and he was trying to walk away. And what I didn't know was my asshole friend was taking pictures while trying to talk to him.
Got him.
I didn't even know that. He's trying to walk away. But when I was trying to say, hey, you know,
he thought you were trying to get him.
When he's trying to walk away, he goes, I remember your face. Like, he thought I looked familiar and worked with me. That was funny.
He was busy kicking a speed bag in the
I've seen that
That's
face
right.
somewhere.
That's right.
Yeah.
Somewhere before.
Yeah.
We're talking about the mob. So the thing I'm curious about is this, the code of conduct, the omerta that they had, like, I think is responsible for how long they were successful at what they did. I mean, they really didn't talk. I mean, right. It was even, I mean, if you, like you said, I mean, someone tried to fucking whack that guy. And in court, he was like, don't know, couldn't tell you. Yeah, like, totally. It's, you know, I watched, like, you're just not even going to rat on the guy, even though he tried to kill you. That's crazy.
It was a generational family thing bred from childhood. Like, I watched an interview with some guy, and he said his uncle was a known mobster. And he came home from school, and he was all excited. He was like, hey, I'm the class president. And he's like, yeah, what's the class president do? And he's like, oh, like, if the teacher leaves the room, I watch the class, make sure no one does anything wrong. And if they do, I write their name on the board.
You extort those kids?
And so he's like, you know what you got to do? You got to take that button back to your teacher and give it back to him, tell him he can't be the president, and made him go back and not be the president anymore because he's like, you're a rat. Like, he's like, you're a rat.
Wow.
He was 10.
Wow.
So, you know, from that age, like, they're in school.
Are you the hall monitor? Yeah. Huh? Was that
Michael Francesi that had the gas station? The gas station extortion?
I didn't finish the whole thing, honestly, but yeah, that's, I remember that story specifically, that he got elected president and his uncle was like, no, you're a rat. Go.
That's
take
funny.
It back.
Yeah. The hall monitor.
What's the gas station extortion?
Oh, no. His dad, Sonny Francesi, I think he just died. He was the oldest mobster. Like, he was still in his 90s, and he was still, like, fucking, like, he got released and got sent right back because he was still doing rackets and shit. But his son, Michael Francesi, had, he had this scam where he would buy gas stations and then he would like sell all the gas out, but he wouldn't pay the taxes on it and they'd pocket it and then eventually close the gas station down and just fucking open up another one. And they were making millions for the Colombo crime family from
it. Yeah. Just buying gas stations and selling the gas and then
paying taxes on it. Yeah. He says that at the time that you could go for it for 2 or 3 years before the taxes caught up with you. And then, then when they start sending letters and notices and shit like that, they had a system to put it off as long as I could till it was time to close it down, go bankrupt, open up under a different name. And I mean, I couldn't perform any of these schemes, but I've just seen his interview so many times and he brought in so much money.
Sounds like a plan. We could help.
The thing is, everybody that does that, they work their balls off for their family and the dedication they have. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't even want to use honorable, but I guess, you know, being committed, I do know what it's like to commit with your whole life to something and swear like, bam, this is, you know, I'm committed to this.
Yeah.
And that does take a lot. And that is what they were doing, you know, but which is crazy though, to believe that it's somebody else that someone else's decisions that you're backing with your life, whether they're right or wrong.
Right.
The boss says it is. You know what I mean?
Military does that.
But it always bites you in the ass. I mean, eventually you're either going to get whacked or you're going to be in jail.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's because their life depends on it. Like, if they have to operate by that code of ethics because they're hoping that the other guy is doing the same. Because if everybody really did what they were supposed to do, I guess the idea is that everyone would stand up to that and not get caught or
just
whatever.
Just like a marriage.
Flips.
Same fucking thing. Yeah.
So within the mob families, there's the main boss who pretty much calls all the shots, like, and he gets a taste of everything that's done. Every criminal enterprise in the family has to kick up to the boss no matter what. And then under him, there's the underboss. And I'm not really sure what the underboss's role is.
Underboss runs a lot of shit.
Just daily shit.
Yeah, there's also the consigliere.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just going to mention, yeah.
Yeah, and the consigliere and the underboss, usually they, you know, according to everything, you know, that I've studied, because who knows, you know, I'm not part of the mafia, but they say they have about equal power as far as like having the boss's ear.
And they help sort of quash internal disputes. Mm-hmm. They'll, you know, give advice, et cetera. But then under them are the made men that are like life. And that's the
what's that word, Rob?
Cap regime.
He didn't look. He didn't have to look. I couldn't pronounce it. And he just
I don't know what it says.
Oh, that's right though.
Yeah. I can't read.
Yeah. And then even under that are the soldiers. Like,
yeah. Oh, that's true. Cause there's the capos then under that are the made men.
Yeah. Even the capo has a lot of power in his neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. And then there's made men under the capo. But once you're, and then there's still, even under that, there's like a made man is probably going to have a couple dozen associates that are running shit for him.
There's a lot of people that like aren't part of the family, but they're associates, or they have a few businesses and they do some business with the mafia. But a lot of businesses, you
had to, and you probably still do, but you couldn't, like, if you were in the entertainment business, mm-hmm. like in, say, like, I don't know, like, say, like the 30s, you couldn't help it. You had to work for the mafia because they owned all the bars, you know, all the seedy establishments, entertainment labels, everything. So
yeah, I mean, every place that you were going to come up, like every place you were going to put in your dues to become a singer or an actor or whatever, odds are they owned it.
And that's what non-Italians, that's the only thing you could be, was an associate. You never make it further than that if you're not
Italian. Because you couldn't become a made man if you didn't have Italian
or any heritage. Of those positions. Associates, the best you could.
But you could have your own family, you know, like say the Irish, say the Westies, they became known as in Hell's Kitchen, New York. They had their own gang. It used to be Mickey Spillane, and then eventually Roy DeMeo whacked him for the Italians because they were both, the Italians and the Irish were arguing over this big arena that they're building over mm-hmm. who's going to get all the money, because they would have they would own the construction, the garbage materials, and then they would make all this tons of money off building of anything. And then when Jimmy Coonan came up and he was running Hell's Kitchen and his guys under him, they became known the Westies. They were like so violent, and they would just, he walked around with the head of somebody, went bar to bar just to show people what would happen if they fucked with him. And
so you're going to conform.
Like, so like they had their own world, and then like, you know, they worked with the Italians, but that was kind of a rare thing to do. Like when that arrangement happened, it was like a big piece of history. Cause before that, they kind of hated each other. And then the Irish guys resented Jimmy for starting to act like he was Italian and dress like them and shit like that. But there was, anyway, it was always separate, like, groups and shit like that that were associates, the Jewish, you know what I mean? Like, that was one thing, too, that when Luciano took over, he said, fuck it, let's all work together, the Jews, you know? And a lot of his friends were Jews, like Bugsy Siegel, mm-hmm. for instance, mm-hmm. and Mayor Lansky, of course, and those guys, like,
before he worked for Rothstein at one point, too, didn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was their mentor.
Yeah.
So Luciano was pretty much the one that kind of bound everybody together, and kind of
he gets credit for it because he arranged the killing off of the Mustache Pete's and the starting of the new regime, and he
kind of a new era.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he kind of ushered the post-prohibition. I mean, I think everybody was running like a prohibition gangster, and prohibition was ending and something had to shift. And I think he was the one who stepped up to shift it. And then it's like, I mean, unless you're like doing hardcore studying, it's like you kind of grow up hearing the names of the prohibition era gangsters, and then you don't hear anything else until John Gotti. Like, there's just a void of, you know, you don't learn about any of these people or the cities or the bosses. And again, I think it's that code of silence that kind of props that up. And, I mean, they don't even show up in the media. It's like you have to be researching it to find out who these, like, you're not going to find out about this stuff casually.
I think movies kind of did that too, though, you know, like movies, you know, Gotti and Capone and some of these bigger guys, like movies came out about them and you saw them and that was kind of it.
Well, they were making movies about Capone when Capone was running.
He was still running it. Yeah.
The first Scarface.
So. So, I mean, like that, I think that's why, in my take on it anyway, is why they kind of, you know, you pick up on those names. You have these certain names, and like Luciano, like I knew that name, but until now, I didn't know that he was as big. Like Brent said, he was as big and as powerful as he was, and you know, in bringing in this new era into the mob or the mafia. So you know, that's what studying does, though. I guess you learn new stuff every day. So.
I'm looking at the list of the Don't Speak Family Secrets, Blood for Blood, Tribute, No Adultery, Ethnicity, all these codes of ethics. And that there's 8 of them, and the last one being no facial hair. That's weird that made the list. It goes all the way down.
Are you just sad right now because you're out? Like, you're like, facial hair, man. No facial hair?
It says,
like,
members are not allowed to grow mustaches.
Hell?
I don't know. That is weird. That's weird. They're like, some guy didn't like it at some point.
Nah.
Right up there, don't cheat on your wife. Blood for blood. Keep family secrets.
No. Not don't cheat on your wife. Don't sleep with someone else's wife.
Oh, that's, of course. Yeah.
That's a totally different rule.
Two different things. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not a club you want to be part of anyway.
Yeah. No.
I
don't know if this doesn't qualify as facial hair anyway, for the record.
That is definitely pubic hair. Yeah.
I wonder.
And your nose is the dick. That's all.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So then one of the, and I know it's something that's still used all the time. I think one of the things that was the biggest blow to the mafia was the RICO Act, which suddenly made it able. It made feds able to go after bosses, because up until then, it's like, yeah, there's a boss and the boss ordered a hit. The boss told people to go rob this thing. The boss told people to do all this stuff. But since the boss himself wasn't doing any of it, he could never get arrested. And then the RICO Act, which was the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act in 1971, suddenly changes that, because now a boss can get arrested for conspiracy. The boss can get arrested for just giving the order. And I think that made a lot of bosses start to rat, and it made a lot of bosses, like, it suddenly put more heat on them, I think. And for
not a lot of bosses ratted, but they didn't have to, because you could just, as long as you could follow the trail up, you could bust them all the way up. And even though RICO was drafted in 71, it wasn't until Giuliani used it in the 80s, like, no one knew what to do with it. They weren't using it was just sitting there, and they said, fuck, if we use this, we can go all the way up to Paul Castellano for the murders that the DeMeo crew was doing, and they connected them all the way up. And so they brought in the heads of the four of the five families went to jail during that.
That's crazy. That's like cleaning the house.
Yeah. It says between 1981 and 1992, 23 bosses, 13 underbosses, and 43 captains were convicted.
That's quite
over
a blow.
Over 1,000 crime member family figures were convicted by 1990 after the RICO Act.
And I read that the RICO Act, it was used on the Lucchese family, the Gambino family, the Chicago Outfit, and then the Latin Kings. But I also found out that they used it on the Hells Angels, and they used it on Major League Baseball, the LAPD, and the Catholic Church.
Wow. RICO, take that right up to the RICO Pope.
Because if this, I mean, again, someone at the top is making calls that are against the law, they're still able to use RICO to get this guy way down the ladder to say, look, you know, this guy at the Catholic Church, like, okayed this other guy to be, you know, touching children or whatever. And they were using RICO to bust, you know, people higher up the chain who were burying and suppressing information about molestation.
Right, right. And like, also, like, in the 50s, they started using the surveillance, audio surveillance. And after that, like we were talking about in 57, they had that big meeting in Appalachia, and they got busted there. Like, the cops raided that, and there was like close to 100 different big time mobsters from all over the country, like a lot of them. And they did this in Sopranos too. They reenacted this. They ran out the door, like through the woods, down the hill.
Right.
They were tripping. And so they still captured, I think, like maybe 60 of them or something. There was a lot of them. Yeah. And they were like, dude, what's this guy from Kansas? What's Nick Civella from Kansas doing, you know, with, you know, Giancana from Chicago and Trafficante from Florida? And there, and then Hoover wasn't anymore able to say there is no mafia. So then they had to up the ante and put money into the FBI budget and all this. And then they increased all the surveillance, and they started bugging all the places where everybody would have meetings, and they bug their cars, and they just listen.
What year did you say that was? Like in 51?
57 was
In 57. Yeah. So in 51, they created the Top Hoodlum program, which allowed them to start collecting data on who's racketeering in what places. And that's probably where they started doing
to use
that.
They weren't allowed to use the evidence in court, though. They weren't allowed. They could plant bugs in the places where the families would meet and talk about their crimes and their phones and shit, but they weren't, none of it could be used as evidence. They could only use it intelligently to fuck them up.
To find more. To perhaps find out there's going to be a meeting at midnight and we can bust the meeting.
This guy's going to get whacked. Let's go warn him or pull him off the streets.
And again, I mean, I know
it's, let's flip him because he's going to get whacked. Anyway.
Right. And I know it's fiction, but I think that was another thing that was well done in The Sopranos, is this idea of everyone being bugged all the time. time, and they had to go to these great lengths just to have conversations. And they would, you know, he would meet his uncle at his doctor's office because it was against the law to totally bug a doctor's office.
The crazy dude, the guy I told you about, the crazy Don, he was the chin. You weren't allowed to mention his name. If you're in his family, you had to point to your chin. And this guy, when he would take a meeting, he would go out with his bathrobe and shit, but he would go into a building that he owned and go down into the basement and go through a tunnel into another building and then take it off and have his suit to sit at the table with the, for the meeting. Yeah. Wow. Sammy the Bull gave all this up, who's like the most famous rat in the mafia, because Sammy the Bull turned in John Gotti. And they wanted Gotti so bad, they let Sammy the Bull off doing 6 years for 19 murders that he had
done. Fuck.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there was another dude that flipped too at the same time, Anthony Gaspipe Casso. He, at the same time, and I think for the same amount of murders, gave all his information, and they took all this down, and there was an inconsistency because Sammy the Bull said he never did drugs, and Gaspipe said, fuck yeah, I sold drugs with him all the time and shit. And so they had to choose which one they were going to believe, because if they believed one, it discredits the other one. And so Sammy the Bull was the way to bring Gotti down, and Anthony Gaspipe wasn't, him. They decided to believe him that he didn't deal with drugs so they could bring Gotti down and let him off. Then he got busted doing selling ecstasy, doing drugs. But
they knew they'd get him again because the other guy's saying he does drugs, so they're like, oh, we'll get him when he does them.
And the other guy, they said, okay, fuck you, you stay in jail.
Right, that's what I was gonna say.
Of course, for all the info.
And then and meanwhile you that's just confessed.
That's how the mafia cops got busted. There was these two guys, Stephen Caracappa and Joe Esposito. They fucking cops that were working with, you know, they would take money to go get somebody, throw them in the trunk, drive them into a garage, and leave the car there for the guys. They actually did hits. Like, they pulled a guy over, Eddie Lino, again being a friend of John Gotti's, pulled him over, and the cop went up and they just fucking shot him right there on the, I think it's the Belt Parkway in New York City.
Wow.
Went up, and when he, like they said that when he reached to get his glove compartment or whatever, he must have like boom shot him right there.
Yeah.
And these motherfuckers got away with it, the cops, for so long. And then the one, Eppolito, I think, he writes a fucking book, Mafia Cops, and talks about just all the gray area shit. Like, everyone in his family was involved, but not him. And,
right.
And then while he was on Sally Jesse Raphael pushing his book, somebody recognized him.
Yeah. And they're like, this motherfucker. Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. The last
guy. He picked up my son and we never saw him again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
That's so what I was wondering about. You said Sammy the Bull, like, he gets away after 19 murders. Does stuff like that catch up to him? They find those guys? Like,
well, that's
like
what he said. He went to jail.
Oh, he went.
Because because he was selling ecstasy.
Lost that part.
Yeah, fell asleep.
Yeah. No. I got confused on the Esposito part, the whole ecstasy thing. I didn't realize that was the Sammy the Bull guy.
Usually, they go to witness protection program, you know, for so long. And then they usually, by the time they get out, if they let themselves out or whatever, usually the heat seems to die down, but not always. Sometimes they totally get whacked.
People looking for
them. When I was in San Francisco last week, I tried to go to this intersection where in Boston, there was a guy, Barbara. I can't remember his first name, something Barbara. He brought down like a lot of the Italian mafia by flipping, and he went out to California and thought he was safe in Boston. They saw him, he's recognized, and they shot him, just shot him right on the sidewalk and killed him. It happens
as soon as they see him. Yeah. That's crazy. It's crazy they're still around, you know. Like,
I can only think Joe Barbera or Hanna Barbera.
It's probably that. It's the same
something
thing.
Like that. Yeah.
I thought I didn't know it was Lucky Luciano. I was calling him Sausage Luciano the whole time. Dave was getting mad at me. Who was the other one? Frank the Cookie Calzone. Yeah. That one. That guy's pretty popular.
I love their fucking nicknames. Yeah. Man.
Gas pipe. Like, if you someone's ass.
That's because he killed somebody with a gas pipe, probably. He got his nickname. Like,
there's no. Actually, his dad was named Gaspipe.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was his dad's nickname, and it carried on.
Oh, wow.
So I wonder, was the chin already the chin, and that's why they pointed to their chin, or did they start doing that to indicate him, and that's when they started calling him the chin?
No, yeah, so he already had that nickname, and I said bosses, you know, they're not usually the ones that stooge, but there's one for sure, actually two, because the guy in Boston did too, but the guy... Joe Massino, he followed footsteps of Gigante, and he made his people pull their ear when they were talking about him. He ended
like
up
baseball signals.
He ended up the movie Donnie Brasco, which is also pretty accurate. Uh-huh. You know, it's pretty damn accurate. That whole case led to bringing down the Bananos, and Joe Mussino was the boss there after they whacked Carmine Galante, which they talk about in there. They show the newspaper. Look at that. You believe they whacked the boss? That was real. They whacked Carmine Galante, the cigar he was called. And it's a famous shot because he's flipped over in his chair and the cigar is like still in his mouth when he's dead.
Wow. Yeah.
But after that, eventually it was Joe Massimo. And when the heat went on and he knew that he was doing life, he flipped too. He was like, a lot of people give him credit for being the first actual boss.
That's great. And I was trying to find out as much as I could about the modern mob, because I think a lot of people assume it's kind of gone away.
Right. Yeah, you just think,
hasn't gone away. I mean, there was a piece that Vice did, and they were interviewing a bunch, like I think three different experts on the mob, and they've written books and so forth. And their estimate is that currently that there's 20 families still functioning in America with 3,000 made members.
Yeah.
And that was their estimate of where it is. And they said that it was smaller than that, but since 9/11, all the heat has been removed from the mob and has been focused towards terrorism. Yeah. So there was suddenly a resurgence in what they were able to get away with because nobody was fucking looking at them anymore. Yeah. You know, and I thought that was pretty crazy. So I don't know. I saw that there's a guy out of Philadelphia named Skinny John Merlino, who they think is
Joey Merlino.
Joey. Oh, you're right, Joey. Who I think is they said he's like the most legit, like old school mob boss currently alive. That was what this article said. I don't know if you know much about that guy or what.
Yeah, he's from Philly. There was a Philly Mob Wars. Used to be back. See, that's the thing is like back in the old days, there was a time like, let's say, like through the 50s till like the 70s, where a lot of the bosses stayed intact. They weren't whacked.
Right.
It was like a tighter family. They all respected each other.
Yeah.
And the guy in Philly was Bruno. And everyone, you know, he was looked at like people liked him for taking care of their neighborhoods and stuff like that.
Which was kind of an old school part of the mob. I mean,
they were threatening people
to make sure they paid for protection. At the same time, they were offering protection, you know, in a lot of those neighborhoods.
Yeah. So they whacked Bruno. And then there was like a succession, you know, Philip Tessa thought he was the man and they put a bomb under his porch, boom, and blew it up when he was going in his house. And then Nicky Scarfo, he was like such a murderous, like he just killed everybody, his own people. He's one of the guys that he would get insecure and think like people under him that he knew since we're kids, they grew up, you know, with him, he would have them killed because he thought they were getting too popular and that they were going to make a move on him.
Damn.
Oh my God. So brutal. Yeah. And then, Joey Merlino came up, during the wars, the Nicky Scarfo wars. And yeah. And he fought with, this old school, trying to think of who the guy was after, Nicky Scarfo that used to drive for him. Blanking on his name right now. But yeah, him and Joey Merlino, like they've had like a war back and forth. And, killing everybody, so many. That guy that came up, Harry Riccobini on YouTube, really. That's from those days. That was Scarfo trying to whack out the Riccobini brothers for not falling into line and doing business with him.
Fucking crazy. So, and that's still like modern day shit right there.
Yeah. Okay. So my friend is a police officer in Springfield, Massachusetts. So he tells me, and he sends me, by the way, you can go online. You can get online, and there's newsletters you can subscribe to that give you the arrest reports of the current mobsters and stuff all the time.
Yeah.
He's always sending me links to this, but he also, like, his town is run by the Genovese family. And when I was in Massachusetts one time, he was giving me a tour, you know, as a cop, you know. He's like, yeah, that's where Al, the fuck was his name? Not Polito, that's an actor. Adolfo was murdered right there while in the restaurant I was eating. And he goes, see that barber shop? There's a full-blown gambling joint in the back split between two families. Oh, we go by this bus stop. There's a bunch of dudes around and one older guy like in a Hawaiian shirt. And he goes, hey, see that guy right there? He goes, that's a legit button guy right there. I don't know how to say his name, yeah. But he told me the guy's name. Yeah. Mickey Santinella right there. And, I was like, dude, that's an actual mob guy? I went by, I felt like getting out and taking a picture with him.
Yeah.
My mob tours almost never have a real mob guy in it. But, but when I travel around, I usually do that. Like if I'm in Chicago, I swing by and see the site of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre and the site of Al Capone's offices. When I'm in New York, I do tours. Every city almost has some. I want to do one here in L.A., which as far as I know has never been done before, but there's so much mafia history here that people would know about.
Right.
Because, Mickey Cohen from that movie, Gangster Squad, people know a bit about that. And he ran the clubs up on Sunset Boulevard, the Key Club. That used to be his Sherry's. And then that was the biggest shootout between him and trying to remember the Italian shit. I usually don't. Anyway, biggest shootout in LA history is there. Bugsy Siegel had a lot to do with LA. And of course, the FBI's number one most wanted after we got Osama bin Laden was James Whitey Bulger. And then he was captured here.
Yeah.
There's actually a lot of history to drive around and look at.
How big is the base of like people that are as enthusiastic about the mafia as you are? Like, is there forums online?
I wouldn't know.
Stuff?
I don't know.
The only reason I say is like, I think with his magic skills and your knowledge, you guys should make like a mafia card game or something. I just don't know if there's a customer base or a market for that. But you know so much that you guys have little trading cards and who they can kill. They're a boss
We've
card.
We've seen some of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the name you're blanking on was
Dragna. Dragna. Thank you. Jack Dragna.
Is it? Or yep. John Stanfa?
No. John Stanfa was the guy in Philly that was having the blood war with Joey Merlino. Thank you.
Yeah. And then that, the other one. Yeah.
And then Jack Dragna was the guy that had the biggest shootout with Mickey Cohen up on Sunset Strip.
Anyway, didn't they just do a movie about Whitey Bulger?
Yeah, it was called Whitey. Yeah, Johnny Depp played.
That's what I thought. Was it any good? Or
yeah, it was good. It was good. It doesn't make my favorites of all time list. Which, by the way, I did see one that I'll put up as my number three that I think everybody missed. It was called the fuck is it called? I can't think of the name of it right now.
It's just number three in your head.
Damn it. I'm going to come back to that. Okay. It's the act Tom Brady. Yes. You know who Tom Brady is? Anybody?
Football player, yeah.
No. Okay. What's the actor that's something Brady?
Tom Brady.
Tom Hardy. Thank you.
Tom Hardy. How about Tom Brady?
Tom Hardy did this movie where he played the two brothers from London.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called or not. It was so good.
Is it Legend?
Yes. Thank
Legend.
You.
Yeah. It was just like, that's came out like a year ago.
He played. It was so good. I couldn't believe how good it was.
2015.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I've heard it was really good. I heard his performance was off the dial.
Yeah, it's a 7 on IMDb. Yeah. So that means it's good usually.
It was so good. But by the way, this is supposed to be the year of mafia movies. Almost every mafia story is alleged to be being made into a movie. Some
right now.
Some that I know that I'm excited about. I talked about the Martin Scorsese. Mm-hmm. So he's doing there's a book called I Heard You Paint Houses, and it's about Frank Sheeran, this Irishman who he went to World War II and just was killing people. He was in General Patton's kill section, and they said that most services are done in 100 days and then you're done. He stayed for like 444 days just killing people. He would march people to a hole and like have them dig a hole or whatever and shoot him. Cold blooded. He came back. He just started whacking people for the mafia.
Wow.
And Russell,
just turned into that killer over there.
Event for Russell Bufalino. Yeah. And eventually Russell said, hey, I got a friend in Detroit, needs some work done. I put you on the phone with him. And according to the story, he says hello. And the guy says, yeah, I heard you paint houses. Meaning splatter with
panels.
He says I do my own carpenter work too, which means take care of the bodies. And it was Jimmy Hoffa. Started whacking people for Jimmy Hoffa, and then he became Jimmy Hoffa's best friend and driver and all this. And eventually, he allegedly was given the order to kill Jimmy Hoffa, which he did.
And that's why you can't find him.
Well, he's dead. No. Well, oh, Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah, no, he said they put him in the incinerator. Like a mile from the house in Detroit where they killed him. But everybody that he says
was involved has been proven. They've all been questioned from other studies. So it's all the, it's all the Tony Provenzano and the Giacolonis. But anyway, all this shit in the movie is either going to be called, I Heard You Paint Houses or The Irishman. And it's got Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Al Pacino, Ray Liotta, Bobby Cannavale, guaranteed, you know, to be
the classic.
I Heard You Paint Houses would be the title I would go with. That's a great title.
Do you ever try to like position yourself to portray one of those characters?
No, I've been approached by it, and it's, you know, maybe if something was right, but a lot of things are better left as a passion instead of trying to own it.
Yeah, or something.
I shouldn't have tried to own the comic book store. That was an expensive mistake.
Just the list of names that you spit out, like, it is a blur of sausages. If you had lined paper, dude, like,
that's a frequent for Brent, just a blur of sausages.
It happened. It was one time in college. But I'm like, it's impressive, man.
I'm fucking blown away.
In the Colombo, the Colombo Wars in New York, there was a mobster named Greg Scarpa. They called him the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
And he worked with the CIA, by the way. He was actually an informant before Joe Valachi, who gets credit for being the guy to really expose everything about the mafia. But he was working with a guy named DiVecchio in the FBI, and they were trading. They actually the CIA actually used Greg Scarpa to go to the South because there was some scandal where some Ku Klux Klan members burnt. I think they killed a black kid, maybe burned a church down, something like that. And they actually sent the Greg Scarpa there to find out who it was. He found the guy. He found out the guy worked at a TV repair shop. One of the guys. He went in there when they were putting the TV in the car. He fucking threw him in the trunk and like beat the shit out of him. Get all the information from him, and like, and that's all documented. But anyway, Greg Scarpa supposedly doing a movie, and Sylvester Stallone will play him, and he really looks a lot like him.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, hopefully that'll happen.
Fuck.
Yeah, and in Chicago, a movie that would come off like a sequel to The Casino, because to the movie, because it talks about all the events that went on after the burials of Spalato and his brother. So, but it'd be cool too. So, yeah. I hear like so many movies are supposedly being made.
And that, I mean, that definitely happens in Hollywood. It's like, oh, like a studio is making a movie about a rock hitting the earth. Like, we all need to make a fucking movie about the rock hitting. So it's like, if they're probably hearing that, you know, Scorsese's in position to do something. So every studio probably wants to get in on the, the mob action.
And I was at the American Film Market in November. And I do know some projects, you know,
that are coming up.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're good and, you know, watchable. So, which I'm sure some of them you mentioned, they sound pretty good. So
I prefer nonfiction. The Irishman.
You're so passionate about it, man. It seems like if you're not playing the part, you should be directing it. If you're not directing, you should be standing next to the director telling him he's fucking up.
I used to do that on Hollywood tours. I'd go on the tours and hear them talking. You know, the whole the mall at Hollywood and Highland, it's got these huge stone elephants and, you know, statues and all this. And nobody knows what the fuck that is. That's actually a nod to this movie set where they filmed this movie, Babylon, in 1916, and after they did the movie, they left the set there, and the neighborhood was kind of pissed because for years it sat there
on these giant elephants.
Cool. And it was just like an eyesore, you know. Yeah. And then anyway, on the tour, the guy goes by it and he says, he says this movie set was there in the neighborhood for decades, and all the neighbors are pissed. And I was like, how could that be for decades if it was made in 1916, but the Mar Vista Theater, which is on the location now, was built in 1922? Like, that doesn't add up. And he goes, oh, you're right. I was thinking of the Ten Commandments on the Guadalupe Desert. My bad. I used to enjoy doing shit like that.
You should just put on the disguise and go give like guided tours just for kicks.
Guided monster tours. Yeah. Now, again, on our previous episode, I mentioned that when I was in school, everybody knew that Rob was one of the smartest people in the school, and that apparently Rob didn't think so. But I think the past hour, I think, illustrates the fact that that is true.
Certain areas in life that I'm drawn to and pay more attention to, just like anybody.
Yeah. No, I think this is above the this is above
you're a little bit
the
obsessive
like anybody area, you know, because like, yeah, I
he's like, yeah, yeah, I like Ghost Rider a little bit. I have everything. What do you have?
Yeah, it's the collector mentality.
Yeah, really, yeah.
You're collecting information about something you like. Yeah,
it's like mobster Pokemons.
Yeah,
you gotta catch them all.
Mobster Pokemons.
So I'm telling you, I'm surprised you haven't found a community so you have like some mob buddies or something. But
he just doesn't give a shit.
He fucking punk them all apparently. Right. But yeah,
and you even like Pokemon.
No, there's a community and they're like, fuck that Rob Van Dam guy. He's a fucking. He thinks he knows it all.
Hey, there was a. I thought you guys might find this interesting. In Chicago, there was a guy named Sam DiStefano. You should look him up. Mad Sam.
I'll check it out.
And he was a loan shark, right?
Mm-hmm.
He'd loan out $1,000, but you got to pay him the vig like every fucking week, and it would be like someone would borrow $5,000 and end up owing like $35 by the end of the day. Right? But anyway, he liked to torture people. He had a torture chamber downstairs. The Chicago outfit worked with him, but they wouldn't actually let him into the outfit because he was so fucking crazy. Yeah. And he worked with some of the outfit's enforcers, like Phil Aldarizio.
He fucking looks crazy. This guy is like...
Yeah.
Crazy looking. The old guy too. Looking.
Chucky Cromaldi, he wrote the book on him because he killed people and beat people up for Mad Sam. So Mad Sam had two other brothers. There was the youngest one, and then there was Mario is his older one. The young one, I can't think of his little brother's name, but Mario and Mad Sam killed the younger brother because he gets... He gets hooked up on heroin, I guess, and they think that he's shaky and he's a liability. They kill him, and then later in life, Mario and Tony Spilotro, who's the character that Joe Pesci plays in Casino, mm-hmm. they go and they kill Mad Sam. So out of the three brothers, Mario, the older brother, you know, he'll kill both of the younger brothers.
Fuck.
And that's like, isn't that fascinating?
Oh,
like,
my, how does that psychology work? I mean, that's like,
just don't give
obviously,
a shit.
Well, obviously this thing is more important than your
everything.
Blood family.
Yeah,
I mean,
because
everything.
When you take the oath, you say this comes before anything. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If my wife needs me, fuck her. I'm coming to you. And,
right.
Yeah,
all
that's
right.
Crazy.
And I mean, I guess there's the extra incentive of if the boss just told you to do this and you don't do it, you're
gonna
probably going to get fucking whacked too. So I think.
Well, and you keep doing it, like you keep doing those things and eventually you become the boss, you know?
Yeah.
So Mad Sam, by the way, he was Tony Spilotro's mentor. Mm-hmm. Remember the scene in Casino where they got the guy's head in a vice? And
oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was to get information about the M&M murders. They had to find out who Joey Maraglia's partner was, and he was tortured until his eyeball popped out. He was Mad Sam, might have even been there, but Mad Sam was his mentor, brought him up, you know, he liked to torture. They said he used to have an ice pick, and oh, check this out. One guy.
Speaking of ice picks.
One guy. This is one of Mad Sam's guys, you know, that goes out and like loans money and collects for him. So one of his own guys, they suspect him of speaking with the FBI because Bill Romer, who's a well-known FBI guy that's like all after the mob at this time, you know, he's like the mob expert at the time. He meets with this guy. They called him Action Jackson, and they meet in a diner, and Action Jackson, according to Bill Romer, doesn't say shit. He's not willing to flip. You know, he's like, fuck that. I'm not your guy. But because of the meeting, they really think that he's a stooge now. And this is a big guy, like over 300 pounds. They take him to the basement of a warehouse to, they take and they hang him up on a meat hook by having the meat hook go through his asshole while he's naked. And they fucking they burn him with fucking with a torch. They fucking poke him with the ice pick. They're cutting at him. They leave him there, and he dies after 3 days.
Jesus.
And they're laughing at him. They're laughing at the way that he smells and the noises he's making and shit. And this is like one of their guys.
And he didn't even do it.
He's one of their guys. He's one of their guys that's been with him for years doing everything. So
There's a Charles Cromaldi.
Yeah.
He claimed that DiStefano was a devil worshiper. Yeah. That was one of the claims.
So, man, I wish we would have known he was this good and try to stump him. Like, he would have had like a list of crazy questions to try to stump him.
Grimaldi says that he would like foam at the mouth. Well, actually, he would. Everyone claims that. But he would.
He's a sociopath. Too,
when Bill Romer would come over, the FBI agent, to his house, he would to question him about shit. Mm-hmm. He'd wear a robe and purposely have his dick hanging out and stuff, and just stand there in front of the FBI agent, you know, and like, and he would bring him coffee. And after like I think a couple of years went by of Romer going over there and shit, drinking the coffee, he found out one time that Mad Sam was pissing in the coffee in the kitchen every time.
That makes sense. Here's a mafia trivia game. All right, we could all play it.
Let's do it.
Because it doesn't give me the answers. So
right. For the record, we can't all play it.
So this is one of 10. Score. I don't know. You can guess. Like, we can all guess. So who started the first casino in Las Vegas? You have
so, oh, they're gonna say
choices.
They're gonna say Bugsy Siegel.
Okay, so you have Bugsy Siegel, Luciano, Capone, and Gotti. So you're saying Siegel?
But that's wrong. But yeah, there was already so many casinos. And besides, he went down. He was downtown before he worked on the Flamingo. Billy Wilkerson started the Flamingo.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm the just test is flawed. So here,
Billy Wilkerson was building the Flamingo with Del Webb, and Billy Wilkerson started the Hollywood Reporter. He discovered Lana Turner. He owned Ciro's, which is now the Comedy Store, and a Trocadero. So he's a very. They need to do a movie on Billy Wilkerson. But anyway, he ran out of money, went to Mary Lansky. They sent Bugsy Siegel in. He elbowed him out, and now Bugsy gets all the credit. But besides that, Bugsy ran the Cortez downtown. Before he even went to the Flamingo.
I could have gone to bed a lot earlier.
So question 2 of 10, what did Al Capone die from? Gunshots, cancer, syphilis, or execution?
Don't even give him the thing. I don't want to give
him the don't give him the options.
All right. What nationality was Bugsy Siegel? Oh, that's fucking
Jewish.
Jesus Christ. All right. What was the St. Valentine's Day massacre supposed to assess? Or who was the St. Valentine's Day massacre supposed to assassinate?
Oh, okay. No, that's a good one. I got his face. North Side Crew of Chicago. Bugsy Maroon.
All right. 5. Was the St. Valentine's Day massacre successful?
Not in killing Bugsy.
Well, let me give you this has a few of them. So no, the wrong men were killed.
Took over Chicago. He took over Chicago with that move because Bugsy.
Right.
You know, well, here's the answers. Here's the answer they give. It says no, the wrong men were killed. Yes, the right man was assassinated. No, no one was killed. Or yes, people were killed. Mm-hmm. So
they want you to say no, the wrong man was killed.
Yeah,
okay. It was a trap to whack.
Okay, no, that's the wrong one. We'll answer that.
The wrong one.
6. Which of these men were deported to Italy? Gotti,
Luciano.
Final answer.
Genovese, Lanxi. Okay, so we're going Luciano.
There was human error on the last question. You marked the wrong answer.
Did I?
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
Which one?
No,
Valentine.
You hit no men were killed instead of no, the wrong men were killed.
Yeah. Something just happened. Rob broke the test. 7. Okay, who wrote The Godfather?
Joe Bonanno. Oh, wait. Sorry. That was a Man of Honor. Who wrote The Godfather? What's his name? Pulitzer? The fuck is that guy's name? Mario.
Oh, shit.
Mario. Mario Pulitzer.
I give you I'll mark the closest one because
it's right.
Puzo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who gave yeah, it messes everything up.
Right.
So who gave Al Capone the famous scar on his face?
Oh, we're looking for a name of someone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, that nobody even knows that, but okay. They might say it's a guy at a bar, you know, he made a pass at a girl and the guy's
brother, well, there's four names the brother here. So.
Hold on. I think they're gonna say it's Vitali. What the fuck's his first name? Let's see.
No, there's no Vitali on the list.
Okay. Nope.
Read who's on the list.
Yeah. Okay, you have Johnny Torrio, Frankie Yale, Feeder ALO, Peter. Feeder. Why did I say Feeder? And Frank Galluccio. So Frankie Yale.
Well, I mean,
well, it's just a guess.
We don't know.
I mean, yeah.
No, actually, he didn't. Let me see.
The other guys I've never heard of. So, wait, what were the names again?
Johnny Torrio.
Of course, I know him.
Frankie Yale.
Of course, I know him.
Peter Aiello. I don't know how you spell it. A-I-E-L-L-O. Yeah. E-L-L-O. And then Frank Galluccio.
Hold on a second. My original thought was they're going to say Frankie Yale. Just came out as Vitaly, but that's the guy I was thinking of. Should I go with? I'm going to go with Frankie.
Frankie Yale. All right. This test is probably wrong anyway. You're probably. Which of these gangsters owned a flower shop?
Oh, Jaime Weiss.
It's not on there. So this one's. So Schultz, Dutch Schultz, Bugs Moran, Dion O'Banion.
Dion O'Banion.
And Mayor Langsing.
Oh, yeah. O'Banion. All
right. So O'Banion.
He's got him and Jaime Weiss mixed up.
All right. Last one. How did Bugsy Siegel die?
Bullet. 9 bullets. 7 of them that went through him and 2 that missed him. And Virginia Hills.
So I'll mark
Virginia
numerous.
Hills Mansion.
I'll mark numerous gunshots.
Linden Drive.
All right.
That'd be 810.
I'll mark numerous gunshots.
Dave was playing a solid sidebuster over there. He's like, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it says 8 of the 10.
But Brad fucked one up.
Hold on, I did fuck one up. So let's see which one they gave us wrong. Who wrote The Godfather? No, that's correct. It says, okay, so. Oh, did I mark that one wrong too?
Brad fucked up for sure. Was not Rob.
No, that's right.
That's, no, Frankie yeah. Yale. You said Frankie Yale, right? For who? Yeah. That's not the right. For some reason, it says Galluccio that
yeah,
I
marked. Yeah, that probably is. That sounds.
I was the right answer is Frank Galluccio. Okay, okay. Is, okay. And then. What's the other one we missed? Where's the other one at? Sorry.
He's just like a random guy you never hear of. That so.
Yeah. So this one says, was the St. Valentine's Day massacre successful? And to put right answer was no, the wrong men were killed. Yeah, so that was the one that said that. Yeah. So. Yeah. All right.
Well played.
Yeah.
Well played.
More than I would have gotten.
All right. Do we want to shout out some sponsors and call it a day?
Yeah, for sure. Social media, Rob.
Yes.
The Real RVD.
Everywhere.
At everything.
And then yeah. robvandam.com.
Yes.
Correct.
Yep.
Use your tone, look, voice. Go for it, Dave. I got too much whiskey in me to do it.
we want to thank, as always, El Yucateco for their delicious hot sauces and their sponsorship. As we've done in the past, if you're talking to us on Instagram and you're in an area and you don't know where to find it, give us a shout out and we will track it down for you and tell you where you can get it in your neighborhood. We always want to shout out Salt 7 for their amazing float tanks and all that they do for people who float.
And cripples. They're there for cripples too. You can dump your wheelchair over into the tank. You still float. You won't drown.
That was nice having that sponsor for a little while.
We want to thank.
We'll be paying for our floats from now on.
Digital Creations and Dark Side Graphics for helping us print out amazing things that we give away in swag bags and will eventually sell online if we ever get a website.
Hint, shit. And our cameraman right now is laughing at it.
Because he's also our web designer.
That's good. He just doesn't not laugh.
And who did I forget?
Printdirtcheap.com.
And if you go there, you can use the code SOFAKING and get 10% off on your
printing
offer.
Needs.
And yep. I think that's
it.
Sponsors.
All right. And remember, don't be retarded.
Testaccia malata, sai che se ne fotte. Un vagabondo scoglionato più di te 3000 volte con la mente che gli prude. Perché ne ha viste di crude e poi di cotte. Posa genere strapieno dalle 9 a mezzanotte. Manda puttane situazioni ghiotte. Perché il cuore con il cazzo spesso fanno a botte. Tra le opere prodotte regalato per Natale le bigotte. Il manuale delle giovani mignotte. Testa malata pensa solo alla sua pancia. Taglia a pezzi la bistecca, la condisce e poi la mangia. Con la mano si pulisce la sua ignobile boccaccia. La TV un bambino negro piange con le mosche in faccia. Pellaccia furba, ormai niente lo turba. Perché niente è la sua mamma, perché niente non disturba. Lui forza la tua mente poi ci ruba. Testa malata sì che ha fantasia, ma solo quando si masturba. Testa malata lo ignori, nella tua finta vita profumata rose e fiori. Testaccia malata, testa malata se ne fotte.
piatte dei valori, perché la verità è solo ipocrisia a colori. Testa malata lo ignori, nella tua finta vita profumata rose e fiori. Testaccia malata, testa malata se ne fotte dei valori, perché la verità è solo ipocrisia a colori. Testaccia malata non guarda mai l'ora, perché il tempo lo peggiora e poi la noia lo divora. I suoi giorni tutti uguali alla moviola sprizzano vitalità come un feto morto dopo un parto di una suora. Testa malata blasfemo senza freno, forse genio, forse scemo, forse uomo, forse alieno. E tu lo guardi imbarazzata all'estremo come un rivolo di sperma quando scorre sul tuo seno. Testa malata beve rum a dismisura, la sua bocca fa paura quando toglie la sicura. Lui tocca nel profondo perché è un dono di natura, questo suono lo accompagna, lo possiede e lo cattura. Testa malata nel suo letto assorto e zitto, ascolta il suo respiro e poi fissa il soffitto e riflette e si domanda quante volte è stato assorto e zitto a fissare quel cazzo di soffitto. Testa malata lo ignori, nella tua finta vita profumata rose e fiori. Testaccia malata, testa malata se ne fotte dei valori, perché la verità è solo ipocrisia a colori. Testa malata lo ignori, nella tua finta vita profumata rose e fiori. Testa malata se ne fotte dei valori, perché la verità è solo ipocrisia a colori. Testa malata insiste, convinto che l'amore non esiste, perché il cuore non ha buchi triste e resiste, spregevole e immaturo. Guarda fisso la tua donna e pensa se t'ha dato il culo. Lo sconfiguro non ti teme, testa malata sì che crede in Dio, ma solo quando gli conviene. In chiesa immagina le scene di Gesù Cristo in croce imbarazzato, in preda a un'erezione mega del suo pene. Testa malata lo sgradevole, ferisce il più debole, colpisce il colpevole, unisce il futile al dilettevole, spregevole, socievole, asociale, il più serio dei pagliacci senza regole. S'alza di notte e fuma un paio di Marlboro, prende in giro il suo vicino che a quest'ora va al lavoro. Testa malata dorme solo sotto il lenzuolo, coi vestiti addosso come il corpo di Aldo Moro. Testa malata lo ignori, nella tua finta vita profumata rose e fiori. Testaccia malata, testa malata se ne fotte dei valori, perché la verità è solo ipocrisia a colori. Testa malata lo ignori, nella tua finta vita profumata rose e fiori. Testaccia malata, testa malata se ne fotte dei valori, perché la verità è solo ipocrisia a colori. Testa malata lo ignori, nella tua finta vita profumata rose e fiori. Testaccia malata, testa malata se ne fotte dei valori, perché la verità è solo ipocrisia a colori. Testa malata lo ignori, nella tua finta vita profumata rose e fiori. Testaccia malata, testa malata se ne fotte dei valori, perché la verità è solo ipocrisia a colori. Testa malata, testa malata, testa malata, testa malata, testa malata, testa malata.